Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. How do you say it? Buyer? Bayer? Us? We just say, welcome back to the merger economy, y'all. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl, 14 September, Wednesday. Glad to have you along, as it always is. We talk about big corporate mergers on this program, let us just say not infrequently. They can be an indicator of sorts, a guide to the big picture issues that make this economy go round. Exhibit A today comes to us from the farm economy, which is not robust at the moment. The German firm out of Leverkusen over there, Bayer AG, is buying St. Louis-based Monsanto for about $66 billion American dollars. Commodities prices have been in a slump for a couple of years now, which has put pressure on the firms that supply farmers with seeds and herbicides and almost everything in between that they need. But in the farm belt over here, people are fretting about what more consolidation among their suppliers is going to mean. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has that one.
Monsanto is the world's largest supplier of genetically modified seeds and the maker of the weed killer Roundup. Bayer is better known for its pharmaceuticals, but it's also a player in seeds and chemicals. And they're not the only two companies merging in that sector. Syngenta, Dow, and DuPont have put together their own recent deals.
They're all seeing that the farm economy is not going to be great for the next how many years, and they're looking out for the shareholders only.
Casey Stallo is a seed dealer and farmer in Minnesota. He says the wave of consolidations comes as farmers struggle to stay profitable. He says seed and chemical companies haven't helped out by lowering prices.
For what it costs to grow a bag of seed and what they're selling it for, I mean, everyone's getting fat and happy. And then at the farm level, you know, we're just supposed to eat it and take a loss.
Stallo has stopped using genetically modified seeds himself to save on costs. Bayer and Monsanto say that combining will help cut their costs and boost annual profits by about $1.5 billion after 3 years, with more benefits over time. Barbara Patterson is with the National Farmers Union. She's worried cost savings will mean fewer new products getting developed to serve farmers' needs.
The synergies that are talked about are often the layoffs of scientists, of researchers.
Bill Hale, who grows corn, soybeans, and sugar beets in North Dakota, has his own doubts about the deal, but says, who knows?
Maybe they developed some new products that they would not have developed separately.
The deal is subject to regulatory approval. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Hold on to your pumpkin spice lattes, everybody. It is time for holiday shopping season stories. Yes, I do know it's only September. I don't get to decide these things no matter what I think. But the fact is, retailers actually have no time to spare because online sales are expected to be up double digits in the fourth quarter. So the competition for seasonal retail workers is going to be intense this year. Marketplace's Rima Kreis reports.
The most wonderful time of the year is a frantic time for retailers and delivery companies. They need more of just about everybody, says Jim Link with the staffing firm Randstad.
warehouse drivers, transportation individuals, logistics professionals, and then all the technical experts.
Some distribution and fulfillment centers that handle online orders may even quadruple their workforce. Larry Feinstein is CEO of the staffing agency Hire Dynamics. He says most weeks his company places about 4,000 people in jobs. During the holiday season, it's closer to 6,000.
My biggest worry is can we fill all the orders? Can we get the right talent for the demand that's out there?
The right talent, and often the most difficult to get, are workers with technical skills, like forklift drivers or people with experience in IT.
In this world where technology has taken over, you know, a warm body is not going to cut it.
With the boom in online shopping, Feinstein is also looking for workers to staff call centers. But the labor market is tight. The unemployment rate is at 5%. So Feinstein is broadening his search, recruiting at high schools, technical colleges, fairs, and not the job kind.
Yeah, so we'll come to a fall festival and we'll get creative and give out popcorn and hot dogs. We'll let them know we're looking to hire people.
In cities like Memphis or Louisville, where delivery companies have major hubs, competition for workers is fierce, and that means money.
If I were a laborer, one of the major things I'd be looking at is who's going to pay me the most.
John Haber is with the supply chain consulting firm Spend Management Experts. He says in some markets, wages could go up by about 20%. And that's not the only thing that'll cost employers. There's training for customer service people, retail clerks, and drivers, which can take up to a month.
That's the face to the customer, and that's their brand. And so those people need to have training and be buttoned up.
Especially now, says retail consultant Steve Goldberg.
The delivery promise has been shortened, and as we've seen, shortened almost to same-day promises.
And companies that don't keep their promises during the holidays, they may not keep their customers either. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
Relative calm in equities today after a tempestuous beginning to the week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Couple of car items as we continue on. First of all, Ford said today it's going to move all of its small car production to Mexico. The company did say, though, that no jobs are going to be lost here as a result. In Pittsburgh, PA, meanwhile, self-driving Ubers, also Ford's as it happens, started picking up passengers today. Erica Barras took a ride.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I'm Erica.
This week, the cars, four Ford Fusions, each with 20 cameras, seven lasers, and GPSs attached to the top, began picking up passengers. Among them, me. Now, this car isn't fully self-driving. It's still in trial mode. Pennsylvania law requires a human in the driver's seat, so two vehicle operators are up front. It doesn't feel that different from a typical Uber, but I tap a screen that starts my ride. It tells me when the car is autonomous and when the driver starts driving. Within the first 10 minutes, the driver overrides the autonomous system 5 times.
We're still rapidly learning as we're on the road every single day.
That's Rafi Krikorian, who runs Uber's Advanced Technology Center. You know how some cities are built on the grid system? A running joke in Pittsburgh is that it's built on the spaghetti system. Krikorian says that's one of the reasons the city is ideal for testing self-driving cars.
Pittsburgh's road network is really old. Pittsburgh's road network is very complicated. Traffic is a real problem here. We actually have extreme weather.
For now, these rides are free. Uber has been working on these cars for the past 18 months. Another reason Uber's here? Carnegie Mellon University's robotics program, which has made autonomous vehicles for mining, farming, and space. 60 people from the school left to work at Uber. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto says Uber is a catch for the city.
They have invested a couple $100 million into Pittsburgh, and I expect that number to triple or quadruple.
Of course, not everyone is excited about these cars. Engineers started testing them on the streets in the spring, drawing curiosity and concern.
I don't feel safe with that car on the road.
That's hairdresser LaViette Lundy.
Knowing whether or not it could see me or not see me, or if it's going to crash like my phone crashes or like my computer crashes, my tablet crashes.
The city has 4,000 regular Uber drivers and some are worried. When Nathaniel Morley's wife went back to school, he started driving Uber to earn more money. I recently rode with him. First, he got the car ready.
Spray a little Febreze, do the Swiffer if I need to, and just get it looking nice. Make sure it's nothing on the seats.
This is the kind of service Morley says will be lost.
The pluses about Uber is, you know, is the human element. You have somebody there that, for instance, if you have people that are out of town, they get in the car, they say, hey, can you suggest somewhere to eat? Or do you have, you know, any recommendations for places to see, you know, tourist spots, whatever.
We pick up Bing Wan Lee, an engineering grad student.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah.
700 Technology Drive.
Yes.
As a passenger, he wonders what the self-driving cars will mean for the drivers.
But definitely is not good for Uber driver like you. Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
Morley makes around $400 a week driving to supplement his income as a social worker and adjunct professor. It may be a while before he faces competition from driverless cars. Pennsylvania's Department of Transportation is drafting regulations for the vehicles. Uber says it'll be years before truly self-driving cars are on the road, but the first fleet of cars picking up passengers this week, well, that's a start. In Pittsburgh, I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
If that's the medium to long-term future of car-based transportation, the near-term business imperative is very near-term. Uber and all the rest of them have a supply chain problem, their supply of drivers. There's near constant demand for them as people cycle in and out. They're supplementing other jobs. They're getting new ones, what have you. And ride-sharing companies are all tapping the same labor pool, right, especially in big cities. So as Marketplace's Adam Allington reports, they are finding ways to lure people in and keep them.
In certain cities, you can't throw a stick without hitting an Uber or Lyft car. But don't let that fool you. In many places, there's actually a shortage of drivers.
You know, because there really is a limited number of people willing to do this type of work.
Harry Campbell runs the popular blog The Rideshare Guy. He says Uber's been trying to boost their productivity by cutting rates for drivers while also offering incentives to bring new people in.
In places like Los Angeles, Uber and Lyft are competing very heavily with subsidies for drivers and bonus pay and promotions and all these things.
In L.A., Campbell says Uber is offering a $700 bonus for new drivers, and elsewhere in Seattle, Lyft is offering $1,500. Meanwhile, other more niche companies are threatening to suck even more drivers out of the supply chain. Kimberly Toonen is the CEO of CJane Go, a new rideshare service launching today in California, which offers rides for women by women.
We wanted to come out of the gate in Orange County with 400 drivers, and we have well over double that.
There are currently some 600,000 people who drive for Uber, about half of which leave after 1 year. So the churn is huge. Lyft has roughly half that, and Lyft's Adrian Durbin says they work hard to keep them.
We believe that we treat drivers better, and by treating drivers better, we will win the battle to attract and retain our drivers.
Durbin says Lyft allows tips for all its drivers. Uber does so in two states. For its part, Uber's also rolled out plans to subsidize car leases for drivers, as well as access to retirement savings accounts and ad-free music with Pandora. In Washington, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Coming up,
they are globally dominating by stealth.
If you can call a giant nuclear power plant stealthy, then sure. Chinese investment on the English seaside. But first, let's do the numbers. As I said, a tad calmer. The Dow Industrial's down just 31 points today, about a 10%, 18,034. The NASDAQ gained 18 points, 0.3%, 5173. The S&P 500 basically flat, a single point to the offside, closed at 2125. Wall Street Journal reported late in the day today that federal prosecutors in both New York and California have opened an investigation into the cross-selling practices at Wells Fargo. You'll remember that story from last week. Bank shares closed down 0.9% today. We talked about the Bayer-Monsanto deal up at the top of the show. Market reaction was, well, muted. Bayer or buyer, depending on where you are. Gained 0.25%. Monsanto up about 0.6% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.69%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Consider with me for a moment, if you would, bacon. Or more accurately, the way pretty much all bacon is packaged. Those nice, tidy-looking slices all lined up so you can see how lean it's going to be. But then you get it home, you get ready to put it in the pan, and although you already knew it in your heart of hearts, you realize how fatty bacon actually is. That creative packaging is the subject of a new piece on Bloomberg by Paul Lucas. It is headlined, Why Supermarket Bacon Hides Its Glorious Fat. Paul, it's good to have you on.
Good to be here.
The gist I get from this piece is that the bacon industry is lying to the consumers of America when they just show us those leading edges of the bacon slices.
I think that's a little harsh to okay. say that they're lying. I think they are presenting the product in the best light.
Yes.
I actually think that package format, which is called a shingle pack, is kind of ingeniously deceptive, if you want to call it that way.
So okay, go with ingeniously deceptive, I'll use another word. Go ahead.
I think it's remarkably clever that they figured out, and they figured it out a long time ago, something like 65 years ago, that if you just show the leading edge of each slice and don't show the total top or bottom of any slice, you present the illusion of the bacon being much leaner. And the thing is, who exactly is being deceived? Who does know?
Exactly.
Who does not know that bacon is fatty? I mean, it's not only an essential aspect of bacon, and we want it to be fatty.
Exactly. That's
what makes it taste so good, or at least that's part of why.
Right. So you flip that package over, though, and there's a little window on the back where you see the dark underbelly, if you'll pardon the pun.
The dark underhog belly.
Right. That's where the fat is. But that little window right there, I mean, that's legislated. That has to be there.
Yeah, the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which regulates bacon and other meat products, they came up with that regulation in the early 1970s. It was enacted in 1972, went into effect in 1973, and it mandates that a, quote, representative slice, unquote, be visible as part of the package. It doesn't say it has to be on the back, but that's where most bacon manufacturers put it, unsurprisingly. It's basically a truth in packaging maneuver there.
Talk to me for a second about, I guess in your piece, it's called the backing board, but it's called the L board in practice. And it's that sort of thing that folds over the top and sort of holds the bacon, if you will.
Yeah, the sliced pieces of bacon, or the shingled slices, as it's called in the industry, they are put on this little piece of paperboard, and it has a perforation and a hinge that has a flap. And so the top flap covers the top slice of bacon, so you can't see all the fat there. And that flap also has all the branding information,
right.
You know, the manufacturer's name and logo and so on. It also has a die-cut window on the back, and that's where you can see the bottom slice on the back of the package.
Was it Oscar Mayer or Smithfield? I mean, who came up with this, the shingle packaging and all that stuff?
The problem with a story like this is, as I discovered as I was trying to report it, there aren't many people alive who were around when the shingle pack was invented. And surprise, surprise, it's not the kind of thing that was well documented. So you call these companies, whether it's Oscar Mayer or Hormel or whoever, and you get these old timers who vaguely remember talking to other old timers back when they started. And it's not clear exactly who came up with the shingle pack itself, but if you look at old print ads,
right,
for bacon in magazines in the 1950s, you can see lots of brands were using something like the shingle pack. But back then, they didn't have to have the window on the back.
Paul Lucas, it's a piece on Bloomberg.com. It is called Why Supermarket Bacon Hides Its Glorious Fat. It is a fascinating little piece. Paul, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Theresa May, the new-ish Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, is facing her first big economic and foreign policy decision, unless and until Brexit happens, of course. But that's a whole nother story. May is set to decide whether to give the go-ahead to a hugely controversial multi-billion-dollar plan approved by her predecessor to let China build and run a nuclear power plant on British soil. It would be a first. No other developed Western economy has given Beijing access to its energy infrastructure like that. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has the story from Southeast England.
Bradwell-on-Sea is a small, peaceful village that's used to a fight. In Roman times, a Saxon fort stood on this shore. In World War II, Spitfires flew sorties from a nearby airfield. Today, some of the villagers are preparing to repel the latest invader, the Chinese, who want to build and run a nuclear power station here.
Not happy with the Chinese running it.
Why not?
They are globally dominating by stealth.
I am not unhappy about a power station coming. We had one for many years. What I'm not happy about is the fact that it's going to have Chinese involvement.
Anxiety about the Chinese plan to build a new nuclear power station here has rippled out across the Blackwater estuary. On the other side of the river, where he can see the old power station from his bedroom window, a retired professor of international relations, Barry Jones, is worried about security.
Should strategic relationships between the West and China deteriorate in the future, a nuclear power station of this type could be deployed in a way that would be damaging to our material and strategic interests.
They could switch it off.
Switching it off would be the least serious, in a sense.
There are, he says, far more alarming possibilities if China becomes an enemy.
You can turn a nuclear power station into a dirty bomb very, very easily. You explode the installation in a more conventional way, but then it distributes nuclear waste on a wide scale.
Supporters of the project take a much less apocalyptic view of future Anglo-Chinese relations, and they point to economic benefits. China would be allowed into Bradwell if it put some $8 billion into another nuclear project in England. Claire Jacobson of the EEF Manufacturers Organization says that could prove a bonanza for Britain.
In terms of construction, that's some 25,000 jobs. And in terms of long-term skilled nuclear workers, that's some 900 jobs. So, you know, you're talking a fairly big impact.
And, of course, there's Brexit. As it starts to disengage from the European Union, can Britain afford to rebuff a powerful trading partner like China? Jacobson says Prime Minister Theresa May should endorse the deal.
I think it would be one of the early clear decisions. I think it sends a signal that Britain is open for business.
406. Some China watchers also dismiss the security concerns. Ben Chu is economics editor of the UK newspaper The Independent. He says it would be incredibly self-defeating if China misbehaved in any way at all at Bradwell.
Why would it do that? It would ruin its own investment in the UK and also ruin its potential to sell nuclear power to other countries, which it hopes to do. It hopes to be a big exporter of this technology.
But critics of the deal say it will infuriate Britain's closest ally, the United States. Dr. Paul Dorfman, a nuclear scientist with the Energy Institute, says Theresa May must ask herself a simple question.
Do we actually wish to let the Chinese military into key UK strategic nuclear energy infrastructure?
And that is effectively what this country would be doing if they allowed them to build a reactor at Bradwell.
Absolutely.
Prime Minister May faces a tough decision. Strike a deal with the Chinese, show that the UK is open for business and upset the US, or antagonise China and risk deterring foreign investment. Whatever she decides, there will be howls of protest. At Bradwell-on-Sea, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We told you yesterday about those new census numbers. Household incomes are up, poverty is down, good and more good. But even with those headline bright spots, a whole lot of Americans are still waiting for a more lively economy to come calling. So we're going to bring back our Every Now and Then series. It's called My Economy, How Things Feel to People Actually Living in the Economy Out There. Today, it's Eden Wagner. She's an accountant in Eagle Mountain, Utah.
When we bought our condo, we were really excited. It was a really nice condominium. And then the bubble burst, and our home value dropped by like 30 grand. We couldn't have sold our condo if we had paid someone. Like, our loan was so upside down that it was absolutely ridiculous. My husband's, his current job, he's working in the oil field, so that's iffy. You know, when he goes out, his wages are great, which is why we got him into the oil field in the first place. We were going to pay off all of our debt and be able to get our condo out from being upside down. And we had all these plans, and then 4 or 5 months of no paycheck totally derailed all of that. If we had a steady income for him, I think that we could definitely get back on our feet. When we got married in 2006, if I had looked forward to now, I would be in the house that I'm going to spend the rest of my life in with at least one kid, if not more, lots of land, lots of animals. We have a Pinterest board with all the stuff that we want in this dream house. We have the plan that we want. I mean, all we would have to do is call someone and say, hey, this is what we want. I definitely feel like for the amount of time and effort my husband and I put into work, we should be further ahead than where we are.
That was Eden Wagner. She's an accountant in Eagle Mountain, Utah. Take a second, would you, and tell us your story. There is a place you can do that for us. It's at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, which comes with the observation that I love my pets as much as the next guy, but there has got to be a limit. And I think I found it. A woman in Australia was concerned that her pet goldfish seemed to be choking on something. Off to the vet she went, and sure enough, Conker, that was the fish's name, Conker as in conquering hero. Anyway, he had swallowed one of those pebbles you put at the bottom of a goldfish bowl. Long story short, emergency fish surgery, and one night in the animal hospital later, Conker was fine. The balance due, however, was $375. For a goldfish. And no, I am not a horrible person. Seriously, I'm not a terrible person. Seriously. All right, the Dow off 31 points today, and the NASDAQ up 18, the S&P 500 basically flat. As I said, very mellow on Wall Street today. Chris Clark, Brad Fisher, Jake Gorski, Bill Lentz, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.